Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Welcome to Thursday, January 25th. Thursday is that day conveniently located right between Wednesday and Friday, which means one more day and then the weekend. And I hope you're having a great week. So nice to have you join me this morning. Rebecca Maxwell at the board, Paul Perreault in the newsroom. We've got a great, great show coming up. Carrie Hart's going to be with us in just a minute. She is a Middle Eastern correspondent right now, just covering Mike and Karen Pence's trip. We're going to find out what it is like over there, and we're going to talk to her in just a few minutes. I found an interesting story of a female journalist is filing a lawsuit in connection to Vice President Mike Pence's visit to Israel. I'm going to ask Carrie about that. This woman's name is Tal Schneider. She's filing the suit after female journalists were separated from their male counterparts and sent to a separate fenced-off area with limited visibility when Pence visited the Western Wall. Under religious law, women and men do have to separate at the Western Wall. The rules were also applied to journalists, so we'll find out if she was part of that as well. All right. You know, the word hope in the Bible is has such a powerful assurance and certainty. We sometimes, in our English translation and version, We say, well, we hope so. Like, is it going to be a nice day tomorrow? Well, I hope so. But we have this major problem for English, but not for the Greek, because the Greek says we have total assurance. But it's easy to misunderstand many passages in Scripture when it comes to the true sense of the word hope. We see that in verse 5 of Galatians 5, because Paul says we simply await that righteousness. We don't work or strive for it. We know it is coming on its way, so we can wait eagerly rather than anxiously. So I hope that you are not anxious this morning. Whatever your day has in store for you, I hope you have a calm confidence. God is in control. We're all good in that department. Offer to him what your anxieties are. He will care for you. He will never leave you or forsake you. All right, it's 6 minutes after the hour. Up next, Carrie Hart, live from Jerusalem. Good morning. It's 8 minutes after the hour. Carrie Hart is a veteran Middle East correspondent based in Israel. She's got over two decades of experience. She brings firsthand insights to Western audiences that would like be us, with a very unique perspective on the news. Carrie reports on topics affecting Israel and the nations, connecting with top Israeli and global leaders. And she is with us this morning on our studio line. Good morning, Carrie.
Good morning. Shalom from Jerusalem.
Shalom indeed. So tell us, first of all, how are you?
Doing great. It's raining here. We're always happy to have rain in Israel.
Oh, I bet. So let's talk about how Mike Pence was received in Israel by the government leaders and the members of parliament and the general public.
Well, the visit was welcomed by those already excited that Trump made history declaring Jerusalem as Israel's capital. There were posters, there were signs everywhere, and great anticipation that Pence would reconfirm America's commitment to Israel, which he did.
Mm-hmm.
That is unique in understanding the Israeli mindset. So despite some opposition from Israeli Arab members of the Knesset, who protested right before Pence's speech in parliament, Pence got the attention of a majority of Israeli citizens who supported him during his visit here, and I think they will support him beyond this.
Now, Carrie, you were, just to get things started, you were actually at the welcoming ceremony when Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu greeted the Pences. Describe what that scene was like.
I did not see Karen Pence there, but
okay.
What happened was there was open coverage of the journalist and the foreign journalist in Israel. We stood there while Pence's big van came right into the press tent on the prime minister's property where his office is. There was an army band. There was an honor guard. And Netanyahu and Pence walked down the red carpet together. They observed the honor guard. The national anthem of both countries was played. And that was about it. Usually there's speeches, but not this time.
Okay. So what were you what are you thinking were some of the most significant parts of Vice President Pence's visit to Egypt, Jordan, and Israel?
In Egypt and Jordan, the focus was on explaining Trump's position on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Now,
Pence made it clear the U.S. is fully engaged in the peace process, wants it to continue, wants to see a peace deal emerge. He said the U.S. is committed to the status quo regarding Jerusalem's holy sites. Now, this was important for Jordan, as Jordan sees itself as the guardian of those sites. Jordan's King Abdullah, he didn't like Trump's statement on Jerusalem, and so he made it clear in talks with Pence. He declared that East Jerusalem is the capital of a Palestinian state. But Jordan gets a lot of money from the U.S., and King Abdullah will work with the White House in furthering the peace process. So I think what was missing in this visit was an appointment with Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas.
Okay.
He refused to meet with Pence. In fact, Abbas was in Europe at the same time trying to gain European support for greater recognition of a Palestinian state. Since Trump's declaration on Jerusalem, there's been no contact between Abbas and the White House. And meanwhile, Trump's advisors are working on some kind of a new American peace initiative. Everybody's waiting to see what will be unveiled in that peace plan.
Mm-hmm. Carrie, there must have been some common ground between the U.S. and Israel during this visit. Were there some things that were clarified between U.S. and Israel?
Well, you could say that the two allies are tracking better together in their positions on foreign policy than what was true in the previous U.S. administration. In other words, they're seeing eye to eye on several issues. First of all, Trump's declaration about Jerusalem being the capital of Israel. Pence was very much behind pushing that initiative, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. embassy will be moved to Jerusalem by the end of 2019. Now, this encourages other nations to move their embassies from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. So that's a big step towards recognizing Israel's right to its land and its capital city. And then Trump's adopted Netanyahu's position on the Iran deal, that it's a disaster. They're saying either fix it or nix it.
Mm.
And Pence strongly stated the U.S. will never allow Iran to acquire a nuclear weapon. And that Trump will no longer certify what they're calling this ill-conceived agreement. So Trump is now working towards sanctions on Iran's nuclear and ballistic missile programs. And he will implement them if the Europeans aren't willing to alter the Iran deal. He has been proving that what he says, he does.
Mm-hmm. Carrie, are you seeing a closer relationship happening between the U.S. and Israel?
Well, yes, on a political and diplomatic level. There continues, of course, to be tight military and security cooperation between the two countries. That hasn't changed since the previous Obama years. What has changed is that the previous U.S. administration tried to isolate Israel diplomatically. With Trump, there's greater understanding of Israel's political positions on Jerusalem, on the Palestinians and the peace process, and on the issue of Iran. And so there's this stronger stand for Israel by American diplomats, especially those serving in the United Nations. The unfair treatment of Israel diplomatically is finally being addressed by the Trump administration. He's taken strong positions against UN organizations who are biased toward Israel. This is a major change from previous U.S. administration, so it's been good for Israel.
Yeah, Carrie, we're going to take a break here in just a minute. I'm thinking about the previous administration. What was the discussion, if any, about the difference between the Obama administration and now the Trump administration?
I think where both administrations have found mutual ground is always on defense and security cooperation.
Okay.
With Obama, he was not really a true friend to Israel as far as the Israelis saw it. He would always look for ways to connect with Arab nations in a way that was isolating Israel in the United Nations, in Europe. That's changed under Trump. He's showing that he is supportive of the Jewish state. He's listening to what the needs are here. And frankly, this is encouraging for Israel. It's less pressure on Israel to make concessions to the Palestinians. No talk about the settlements. No talk that Israel has to do something to get Abbas to the peace table. It's the ball's in the Palestinian court at this point.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking to Carrie Hart. We're having a live report from Israel. When we return from break, I want to ask Carrie about Mike Pence's Knesset speech. It was certainly a highlight of his 2 days in Israel, and I want to find out what made that speech so special. We'll be back in a minute. It's 16 minutes after the hour. Good morning. It's 18 minutes after the hour. Carrie Hart is my guest on our studio line this morning. She is live from Israel. She's a veteran Middle Eastern correspondent, two decades of experience, and we're talking about Mike Pence's visit to Israel. So, Carrie, I'm just curious about Mike's big speech, the vice president's big speech at the Knesset. It was really a highlight of his couple days in Israel. What made that speech so special?
It was a special speech, Bill. Pence is very perceptive when it comes to the Jewish people. He grew up understanding Jewish history, and as a Christian, he knows his Bible well. His message was so special, and I think it touched many hearts. He spoke of the Jewish people's aspiration to return to the land of their forefathers and to hold on to that promise throughout their generations. He showed great sympathy concerning the suffering and persecution of the Jews throughout the ages, including the darkness of the Holocaust. He marveled at the faith and resilience of the Jewish people. He said that Americans would pray for the peace of Jerusalem, and basically he quoted from Psalm 122. At one point, he said, the U.S. is proud to stand with Israel and her people as allies and cherished friends. And, you know, listening, you thought he meant it, that it came from his heart. And it was touching for Israelis to hear these statements from a high-level U.S. official.
Wow, I want to beat my chest like Tarzan right now. That's it's just inspiring, actually. Now,
it was inspiring. I think it was probably one of the greatest speeches ever from a U.S. high-level official in the Knesset.
Yeah, so President Trump certainly has demonstrated his commitment to Israel, and now Vice President Mike Pence has certainly confirmed that commitment. So let's talk a little bit, if you would, Carrie, about just the what you see as the future look for U.S. and Israeli relations.
Well, I think the next challenge will be to see America maintain its role as a peace broker here in the Middle East, especially with the obstinance of Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian leader, who won't even communicate with Trump, let alone Netanyahu. So how will the peace negotiations move forward, and what is the new American peace initiative that's yet to be unveiled? Israelis will also be looking for the development, the building and construction of the new American embassy in Jerusalem, supposed to be completed and promised to be completed by the end of 2019. So I think the strong U.S.-Israel alliance will continue, and stronger alliances with other countries will form under the American-Israeli security and diplomatic umbrella. A strong Israel, a strong America, two allies strong together like that, it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. So, Carrie, I know that trust is a big word, always has been with Middle Eastern allies. What do you think about Israelis? Will they have greater trust now of American intentions in the Middle East? Do you think that we're improving that trust level?
Well, hopefully so. Pence said that Trump's decision regarding Jerusalem was the clearest sign yet of the unwavering commitment of the U.S. towards Israel. But, you know, Israelis are never sure how long America's commitment will last. Pence mentioned that America will stand shoulder to shoulder with Israel in the battle against radical Islamic terrorism. Mm. So Israelis will be looking at how America delivers on that promise, especially concerning Iran and this not-so-good Iran deal. Currently, Israeli support for Trump is considered at an all-time high, so this is a very good prospect. I think that the loyalty and consistency of America's promises will be tested, and Americans' abilities to understand the threats that Israel faces on a daily basis in this region will be very important to the development of Israel's trust toward the United States of America.
Mm-hmm. Carrie, I also saw a news story of a female journalist that is deciding to file a lawsuit in connection to the vice president's visit. She said that she was separated from her male counterparts and sent to a separate fenced-off area with limited visibility to Vice President Pence when he visited the Western Wall. Isn't that pretty much just a religious law thing, that men and women have to be separate at the Western Wall?
Not only do men and women separate at the Western Wall, there's an Orthodox control over the Western Wall. And I think things probably won't change until there's a change of government. The Orthodox have a big standing in the Netanyahu government, and these things continue. There is some unfair practices against women at the wall. This has been common. What happened in that situation apparently was that the men got the first couple of rows, the women had to stand behind the men, and they weren't able to get a good view of Pence. He was only at the wall for about 15 minutes, 30 seconds, putting a prayer on the wall. The Israeli Foreign Press Association has issued a complaint to the Israeli government about this. I doubt anything will be done. You know, it's always a fight for the best position when you have journalists covering a big event like this. Mm-hmm. So it's never easy for anyone on the ground. But I think most of his visit went very smoothly. And I think the United States was happy, Israel was happy, and I think we're moving forward from here, hoping that the relationship remains strong between the two nations.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to help everything in the Middle East if that stays as it is. By the way, the one area that Israel has some struggles with the United States is over Syria. Israel hopes that Trump will be more active in Syria and in cutting down the way Iran is using Syria to maintain bases and military bases there. And Israel will keep knocking out those military bases because it's a threat to the Jewish state. So we're hoping that to see more U.S. involvement in Syria on mm-hmm. behalf of Israel.
Carrie, I've loved all of your reporting on Vice President's trip to Israel. And now I'm all of a sudden just really interested in you. How long have you lived over there, and where did you come from the States somewhere?
Well, actually, I was living in Minnesota for a while. So oh. I know you've got lots of snow there because I remember those days.
Yes, yes.
I've been here over two decades
okay.
and covering the news here. I also covered the news when I was living in Minnesota. I've lived in other parts of the United States. Life over here is never a dull moment.
I bet.
You need to come for a visit. Have you been here before?
I never have.
Well, I encourage you to come and see the land. It's very different than what you see on television or in the news. Especially this year, Israel's going to be celebrating 70 years of its independence. This April, there'll be 70 hours of celebrations throughout the country from April the 18th on. For about a couple of days there, Israelis will be dancing in the streets together. They'll be singing songs together. It's going to be a very exciting time. So we're encouraging people to come and make reservations soon because otherwise there won't be any hotel rooms. But come enjoy the celebrations here.
Yeah.
Exciting time to be living here. You're part of history making. It's only been 70 years since the nation has been born in modern times. So I'm happy to be able to report from Jerusalem. There's many foreign journalists. They call us foreign journalists because we report for sources outside of outside of Israel, and I'm reporting to Western sources. So it's an exciting place to watch the news, be part of reporting the news, and living in the land.
Yeah, well,
come visit.
Yeah, I will. We're also having a 70-hour celebration in Minnesota next week. It's called the Super Bowl. So thank you so. Thank you so much for coming on the program, Carrie. Just been a pleasure to talk to you. Carrie Hart has been my guest this morning. And we're going to take a very short break and be back with more in just a minute. Stradivarius is being played by Joshua Bell. I like that very much. Speaking of Carrie Hart and her correspondence from the Middle East, here's another story. Caught my attention. Camels were disqualified from Saudi contest over Botox. I know none of this will make sense to you, but cheating has led to the disqualification of 12 camels in a Saudi Arabian camel beauty contest. Reuters reports the camels were kicked out of the competition after judges found out they were given Botox to improve their looks. The National reports some cheaters turned to Botox and fillers to enhance the camel's features. Camel festival judges look for the size of the animal's hump, but also their droopy lip and large features. The newspaper reports camel pageant winners can rake in millions of dollars in prize money. I say to you, camels, just let it be. Just whatever. We'll take a short break for news. We come back, Kim Cotola, at 20 minutes until the top of the hour. It is 25 minutes until the top of the hour. Good morning. Thanks for tuning in this morning. When we live our lives gripped in fear, we limit the trust we put in God. Max Lucado says more about this.
Our fears can become the definition of our lives, that we route our lives around our fears, or we shape our lives according to our fears. You know, that we make decisions based on not doing this or this not happening or avoiding that. And we live a very defensive, cautious life. I think it's helpful to say that anxiety in and of itself is not a sin. It's an emotion. But living in a state of perpetual anxiety is a sin in the sense that it is an act of rebellion. That's kind of hard to hear, but I mean, it's like saying, God cannot get me through this problem. And so to remain in a state of anxiety over the long haul pulls us away from God, and it results in some very negative consequences in our lives.
If you want to hear that full interview, go to myfaithradio.com and type in Max Lucado. You probably know that name, L-U-C-A-D-O, Max Lucado. So coming up in February, the Live Free Challenge, that is an initiative to support the work of International Justice Mission in freeing boys, girls, men, and women from human trafficking. You can join hundreds as we walk, run, and ride to raise money for rescue, intervention, and rehabilitation of trafficking victims. You can get involved at livefreechallenge.org. We'll take a short break and then talk to Kim Cotola. Be back in a minute.
Unfortunately, religious tolerance has devolved into a secular monstrosity called multiculturalism. This is Jim Garlow. In other words, multiculturalism says all religions are the same, but all religions are not the same. Each one has its own worldview and its system of ethics. Take, for example, communist China, where elitist totalitarianism is based on the religion of humanism. All religions are based on some authority. The heightened cultural tensions we have in America are a tug of war between competing religious ideologies. The Lord Jesus Christ, the Creator and Redeemer and Judge of all men, commands us to share the gospel to all. No legitimate government can infringe on our declaring the only truth that can save and redeem our fellow human beings. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Good morning. It's 22 minutes until the top of the hour. I always look forward to Thursdays because I get to talk to Kim Cotola. She's coming to us on Skype. She is host of Cradle My Heart Radio. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Bill.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks.
Good, good. You know, I want to start with an article you wrote. I'd like to start there with something that was recently in Faith Zet, which is Faith Explained. And it's you're talking about five things liberals don't want American women to know about abortion.
And this, okay, so last week when you were out, I spoke with Carmen, who was a guest host, and I think it's been announced that she's got a new spot now.
She does, yeah.
So I was telling her about this article in Women's Health, and it's a, you know, they have a pretty big circulation. I think they're right behind Cosmo on the newsstands, and they've got 35 million if you add up all their social media followers. But they wrote this piece about five things women need to know about abortion. And it was disconcerting to me that a magazine that puts itself forward as, you know, offering health information was so unscientific in these 5 points. So Carmen said, well, you need to write about an answer to that. And I'm like, well, okay, let's try to put that together. And I did, and Faith said, published it this week. And there's been a little bit of a backlash. There are some women who just refuse to believe that abortion is not the answer to a good life for women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I've gotten some very angry emails shaming me. And the thing is, you know, I understand because I used to believe that myself.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it was a rationalization over the grief that I hadn't processed from my own abortion. But I also, you know, didn't know the scientific facts of life beginning at conception. I didn't know so many things. And so I tried to put that together for that piece on LifeSet. And we've got it posted at cradlemyheart.org, too, if you want to read through it. It's kind of a lengthy piece, but I was mm-hmm. pleased that they published the whole darn thing, Bill.
Yeah. Well, let me first start by saying that Carmen has never given me homework, which makes me incredibly happy because you're way more motivated than I am. But let's touch, if we can, Kim, just real quickly on the 5 points. I don't, because I want to lead people to the story, which is on LifeZet.com. But just give them a little bit more tease, if you would.
Sure. Okay, so according to Women's Health, what you need to know is 1/3 of abortions now happen at home. Sounds all cozy and comfy. You just get yourself
sure
a cup of tea and have that abortion at home. After 10 weeks, abortion occurs in clinic. After the first trimester, getting an abortion becomes more difficult, is their third point women need to know. Fourth point, state laws are constantly in flux. And number 5, the vast majority of women don't regret their abortions. So, you know, the first thing that I found so outrageous about this, Bill, is that repeatedly in this article, Women's Health referred to the fetus as pregnancy tissue, which is a somewhat new phrase to me. Pregnancy tissue may involve placenta. It may involve, you know, the endometrium. It may involve the fetus. But they referred to the fetus as pregnancy tissue and they clumps of tissue.
Mm-hmm.
And this is outrageous. This is either ideologically driven or inexcusably ignorant, to pick one. But it is far from telling women what they need to know about at-home abortions. And Bill, if you've ever spoken with a woman who took these abortion pills and then sat at home and bled for days and days and had to decide what to do with the fetus when it emerged as a fetus, you will know that they're, again, not telling women what they need to know about at-home abortions. When they go on to after 10 weeks, abortions occur in clinic, they actually use verbiage that says, it will be gently removed. The pregnancy tissue will be gently removed. Okay, back to pregnancy tissue. But again, this deception works on women. And it's really hard to grasp that, but I accepted it. You know, somehow it seemed that an early pregnancy was distinct from a baby. And so when I asked, is it a baby at age 23 and mm-hmm. a fairly well-educated person, mm-hmm. when they said tissue, all right. You know, I guess I believed it became a baby at some further point, but it's not true. It's a distinct living and whole human being from conception forward, according to the science of embryology. And you can't have it both ways. If you want to be an abortion advocate and you want to call this healthcare, but you're withholding basic fetology, basic child development information from the women that you're taking money from to be the expert, you can't have it both ways. When they talk about, Bill, second trimester abortions being more difficult, they let women know that it's going to be harder for you to find a provider, but they don't let you know that at this point, the reason why so few will participate in it is because it's extremely physically difficult and the methodology is much more brutal. and bloody.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't tell you that. They tell you it's going to be just going to be harder. It's all about access, right?
Yeah.
And then the fact that state laws are always in flux. They're just talking about abortion advocate talking points there about how women have to travel a great distance and stay overnight, and that's a hardship for women who may not be able to afford an abortion in the first place. But, Bill, I mean, I hate to even say this, but it's absolutely true that there are charities out there that will help women pay for abortions, pay for access, get to the abortion, travel, whatever it is that they need. And I'm sure the editors of this piece knew that.
Mm-hmm.
Abortion access is not a problem for abortion providers. I mean, I should say it is the problem for providers. It's not really a problem for women who are wanting to get an abortion. You can do that.
Yeah.
And finally, I took it very personally when they talk about abortion regret, because one of the things that is so shocking to me still is that there's no standard of care in the mental health community if a woman says she's troubled by her abortion experience. American Medical Association and the American Psychological Association do not recognize that there could be a problem after abortion. And although there are some studies that show if a woman had some mental health issues going into an abortion, she's very likely to be vulnerable to problems afterwards, there's no routine screening of depression or other problems to help a woman understand that this may contribute, you know, to your having some struggles in the aftermath. And I also noted in the piece, Bill, all of the research that's out there that shows that there is a problem with women's mental and emotional health after abortion. But my primary purpose in all of this, Bill, is to help women see that it's a spiritual crisis. And so you may not even find your answers in the mental health community. You know, we're going to have to deal with the fact that a life has been lost. And that raises all the questions that only God can answer. You know, what does that mean for me that I participated in this? Or what does that mean for me that I was subject to this if it wasn't my choice? And the love of Christ is what we have to look to there, and what we have to proclaim, and what we have to stake all of our faith upon. And that's my primary purpose. But as I encounter others who are leading women into abortion and telling them that there's going to be no problem afterwards, I have to speak out against that.
Mm. Kim, let's take a break. When we come back, more with Kim Cottola from Cradle My Heart Radio. It is 14 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be right back. It's 12 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Kim Cottola. She's on our Comrex line this morning. And Kim, this last point you made about the regret of abortions, that we don't talk about that. You must know a certain women that you've come across with over the decades that when they were young and a little bit maybe more naive as to the science, they talked about having an abortion, and then maybe decades later they might have said, I killed my baby.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's what happened for me. It's intolerable to think that you're walking into it wide-eyed and believing that this is another human being and you're just going to go ahead and do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so sometimes our mind plays mental tricks. Sometimes we willingly submit to misinformation. But very, very often, Bill, we see, you know, we are being led into misinformed consent. And that is absolutely what happened with me. Now, that doesn't mean I'm not responsible. And I, you know, as I've shared in the past, I went into this emotionally detached. I bought the line that this was problem solving. There was no moral reflection on it because I was told it wasn't a baby. At the last minute, God broke in, gave me supernatural knowledge that, or maybe just common sense, that there was another life involved here and that it was wrong, therefore, and that I should get up and walk out of there. But, you know, when you panic, there's fight or flight, but there's also freeze. And that's what happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so walking away from that, how do you reconcile that? Because what my conscience told me was that a life had ended. I had participated in the taking of a life. And that still was very, very vague. It would be many years before I could say, a baby, my baby.
Mm.
This is why ultrasound is so important, because women will say, if you show them a brochure of fetal development and you'll say, you're 10 weeks along, this is what a 10-week fetus looks like. Some women will, that will not affect them in the way that seeing an ultrasound of their baby's heartbeat will impact them.
Mm-hmm.
Now it becomes very real and very personal. And I think also, you know, any type of blood test that helps a woman know the sex of her baby, it just becomes that much more real as to their actual humanity. But the abortion industry works day in and day out in ways big and small to convince women that there is no humanity before birth. You know, they do it with the help of clergy in that Faith Allowed movement, who misread God's word and misappropriate the scriptures to say life begins with the first breath, Bill, so there's no baby before the baby's born,
mm-hmm.
which is completely absurd and anti-science,
mm-hmm.
Because the scriptures also say life is in the blood. And the DNA is just separate and distinct from mother from conception forward. I mean, heartbeats now have been demonstrated at 18 days, after conception.
Mm-hmm.
So everything about abortion is meant to lead women to think a different way than the truth. is to leading women to believe that there is no baby present in that early pregnancy.
All right, Kim, I got a couple more points I want to cover quickly. 45 years ago, Roe v. Wade, and having the candidate's position on abortion is probably right at the top of who you're going to vote for.
Yeah, people do absolutely want to know about – I'm sorry.
That's all right.
People absolutely do
–
no, it was just my timer.
Okay.
People do want to know about where you stand on abortion. And, you know, there's a lot of gridlock about this in Washington. And a lot of people are, you know, saying, hey, we've got to get past this so that we can get to other more important and more pressing issues in the country. In my opinion, abortion is the preeminent moral crisis of our time. There's a new study that was done last year that showed if we looked at it from a public health point of view, abortion is the leading cause of death because it's taken more American lives than cancer, heart disease, all of the things we look at as public health problems, you know. And right now we see in the latest polling, Bill, that most Americans are absolutely in favor of limiting abortion to either the first 12 weeks or to cases of rape and incest only. Most Americans will say they feel like some measure of abortion needs to be available for women. I don't agree with that. But the idea that Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton have made it legal through all 9 months of pregnancy for any reason is something that goes against the grain of almost all Americans.
Mm-hmm. Another fairly big piece of news, Kim, is Planned Parenthood President Cecile Richards. It looks like she's stepping down. When is that going to happen and what is behind all that?
Yeah, BuzzFeed reported this yesterday, and wow, the internet blew up over it with a lot of other outlets sort of repeating their report. It's an interesting timing. I mean, she has a biography coming out called Make Trouble, I think is the title of her book. And she just granted a great interview to The Cut about her daily day.
Mm.
You know, and it seems somewhat out of the blue. So there are those who are speculating that it's because Planned Parenthood, under investigation by the Department of Justice, is about to take some heat. And she can step away and say, look, they didn't defund Planned Parenthood. I held off all the attacks, right, before the attacks actually bear fruit. There are some that are speculating that that's the timing. Others are calling for her to run for governor of Texas. A lot of pro-life activists have, you know, tallied up the body count under her leadership mm-hmm. at Planned Parenthood. And others are saying, look, you know, we need to pray for her conversion because she is a leader. And what would it mean if she were to repudiate her former stand? And the other thing that I would say about Cecile Richards is if you pull her hand out of the bucket, abortion continues apace. She's not the problem, right? The mm-hmm. problem is that our hearts and minds are convinced that we need to take the lives of the youngest members of the human family to protect the futures of women.
Mm-hmm.
That mindset is the problem. and it's pervasive in our culture, and it really needs the light of Jesus Christ shown onto it.
Kim, always a pleasure. Next time we talk, I'd like to ask you about the whole idea of the Roe v. Wade decision. And was that about demanding privacy protections for personal information and freedoms? I want to talk about that next time we chat.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate the chance.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's 4 minutes till the top of the hour. We'll take a very short break and wrap up hour one. Thanks to Carrie Hart, my correspondent live from Jerusalem this morning, and also to Kim Cotola. Appreciate their coming on the program this morning. We've got a great second hour coming up. Dr. Mark Muska, who we missed yesterday, is coming in today. We're going to have a chance to talk to him at about 7:40. And Dr. Ann Rathbone Bradley, she's going to be coming on. And we had a caller, our listener, write us in, and we're going to discuss the news of that email with Dr. Bradley. So that should be very interesting. That's going to be hour two. If you have never downloaded the Faith Radio app and you're sitting there with your smartphone right now, it's a good thing to do. Go to the App Store. You can get that in Apple or in Google Play and download the Faith Radio app. And that's going to give you access to instant streaming of the programs. Also, you can access the shows you might have missed. You can read the newest articles and you can discover new opportunities to connect. That is always nice. It'll be nice having that on your phone or your iPad or your tablet. Okay. Hour two is just around the corner. Good morning, everyone. So glad you're with us. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.